This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Online, the previous program was Revolutions Per Minute, hosted and produced by the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. And if you appreciate what they're doing and what they've been doing every Tuesday at 5 p.m., please consider becoming a financial supporter here at WBAI by calling 516-620-3602 or go to give to WBAI.org online. Give to the number 2, WBAI.org online. It is now 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the WBAI Evening News with Paul DiRienzo coming up.
A coup in Venezuela, a confrontation in Georgetown, and a culture of resistance on film in Harlem. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. Juan Guaido, the opposition lawmaker who illegally self-proclaimed interim president of Venezuela, Tuesday morning made a call on social media asking the military and people to begin an uprising against the legitimate government of President Nicolas Maduro. Guaido made a statement by video that pictured him surrounded by men in uniform.
Hoy, valientes soldados, valientes patriotas, valientes hombres apegados a la Constitución han...
Today, brave soldiers, brave patriots, brave men attached to the Constitution have heeded our call. We have responded to their call. We have met in the streets of Venezuela, Operation Freedom, the committee to help and bring freedom. I invite you to immediately activate. I invite you to immediately cover the streets in Venezuela. The 1st of May started today. The definitive cessation of the usurpation began today. The coup drew quick support from the Trump administration, but fierce resistance from forces loyal to Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro. Violent street battles erupted in parts of Caracas in what was the most serious challenge yet to Maduro's rule. Meanwhile, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said the administration was waiting for three key officials, including Maduro's defense minister and head of the Supreme Court, to act on what he said were private pledges to remove Maduro. He spoke briefly with reporters outside the White House.
When it assumes power to try and get the Venezuelan economy out of the ditch that Maduro has put it in, those plans obviously were moving ahead on, trying to refine them here in these recent days because things might move quickly. Let me just take one more question.
Yes, ma'am. Administration to labeling the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization.
That's not a question about Venezuela. I'll take one Venezuela question. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Let's say this works. Guaido takes power. Everything is as your administration would like. Will the administration be turning its attention to other equally oppressive regimes, say Russia, Turkey, the Philippines, that are equally repressive and destructive to human rights, sir?
Well, I just say in this hemisphere, we've called out the troika of tyranny, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba. There's no doubt that Cuba in particular has benefited from the authoritarian government in Venezuela by getting below world market oil prices. That's going to cease once Guaido takes power. But our focus right now, as you can well understand, for the benefit of the people of Venezuela and because of the interest of the United States, is on this peaceful transition of power in Venezuela. Thank you very much.
But the rebellion floundered as senior Venezuelan officials rejected the attempted coup and called on the country's population to do the same. A call to march towards the Miraflores presidential palace was heeded by thousands of Venezuelans. A huge rally led by the head of the National Constituent Assembly is currently being held in front of the palace. Meanwhile, in sporadic gun battles around the capital of Caracas, Venezuelan commanders urged soldiers to refrain from shooting back at coup supporters. And he's saying this is not allowed, as a soldier commands his men to stay where they are and hold their fire.
Hey,
And a commander of Venezuela's National Bolivarian Army, Remigio Ceballos, denounced the coup, speaking from a major military base that remains under government control. The use of violence to achieve political objectives is and has been the worst strategy of a rotten political opposition that attempts to take power by force. The National Bolivarian Armed Forces is united to our chief commander, Nicolas Maduro. It is irresponsible for those citizens who walk on the highway to come close to a place where there are a few individuals that are violating the laws, violating norms, and they are risking their own lives. Let's seek peace. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., close to 100 pro-coup protesters gathered at the Venezuelan embassy, which has been occupied with permission of the Maduro government for 2 weeks by a group of activists calling themselves the Embassy Protection Collective. On Thursday, Elliot Abrams, the U.S. envoy for Venezuela, had called on the Secret Service to arrest and remove the activists. But on Tuesday, about a dozen police separated the two groups. An embassy protector, Kevin Zeiss, says the confrontation got ugly when word spread that Juan Guaido had entered the Chilean embassy in Caracas asking for asylum.
We've been outside in front of the embassy all day, protecting it once the coup attempt started in Venezuela and Caracas. And as the day went on, opposition supporters came, of course, in the United States. The Maduro supporters are not here. They're in Venezuela, which is why the coup failed. The people who are in Georgetown, a very wealthy part of Washington, D.C., are former government people and their families who fled the country when the Chavez won the election, the Maduro won re-election. And so we've been outside all day with about 100 opposition people chanting against us, and we've been holding the embassy and protecting it. There were probably about 50, 75 police out here that have set up barriers between us. We just announced a few minutes ago that Guaido has fled into the Chilean embassy because the coup has been defeated. Unfortunately, I think that means that these supporters out here will get very frustrated to know they have lost once again, that Guaido is unable to muster enough support to have any significant impact. And as a result, this embassy, which we've been in now since April 10th, is under threat because they were defeated in Venezuela, so they need a victory somewhere. And we are concerned that the Trump administration may try to take this embassy today and give it to the opposition. Of course, we're here to resist that. That's our purpose. So we have to wait and see how that plays out, but that's what we are prepared for. Our intent is to stay here until this is resolved. The appropriate resolution is for the United States and Venezuela to negotiate. There's an empty U.S. embassy in Caracas. There's an empty U.S. embassy in Venezuela because both countries have broken diplomatic relations. Switzerland and the United States are negotiating to have Switzerland be a protectorate for the U.S. embassy in Caracas. Venezuela's negotiating with other countries to have them as service protectorate in the United States. We're serving as interim citizens protectors. Our hope is that the two countries reach agreement and that begins the process of diplomacy that ends this conflict. There's no reason for the U.S. to try to conduct a coup in Venezuela. The Venezuelan people were very clear a year ago when 67% voted for President Maduro's re-election. This election was observed by 150 election observers from around the world. They unanimously agreed and met election standards for international law, and there was no fraud, and he was fairly reelected. That was just last May. I was in Venezuela for that election. It was a well-conducted election, a very impressively conducted election, which is a whole other story. But we plan to stay here until there's a resolution so that this does not develop into a war over embassies. Our concern is the U.S. takes this embassy in violation of international law. The Vienna Convention requires the United States to protect this embassy, and to give it to the opposition would be the opposite of what the law requires. We are not here illegally. We are here with the permission of the Venezuelan government, the elected Venezuelan government. We have not unlawfully entered. We have not trespassed. The sad thing is, if the United States comes in, they will be trespassing. They will be unlawfully entering. They will be the country the party that's violating the law.
Kevin Zeese with the Embassy Protection Collective on Tuesday at the Venezuelan Embassy in Georgetown. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo claimed in an interview Tuesday without evidence that Maduro was ready to leave Venezuela for exile in Cuba, but that Russia urged him to stay. He said, "We've watched throughout the day. It's been a long time since anyone's seen Maduro. He had an airplane on the tarmac. He was ready to leave this morning as we understand it, and the Russians indicated he should stay." Pompeo later added he was headed to Havana. Meanwhile, Trump threatened that a full and complete embargo, together with the highest level sanctions, would be placed on Cuba if the country's troops don't stop what he called, again without evidence, its military operations in Venezuela. During a press conference from New York, the Venezuelan ambassador to the United Nations, Samuel Moncada, said that Tuesday's coup attempt seeks to promote a puppet government, but failed because most of our people want to live in peace and with the right to self-determination. The Venezuelan official also called on the international community to reject the far-right violent attempt, for it violates every UN charter and undermines peace. In the neighboring nation of Colombia, Code Pink activist Medea Benjamin has been meeting with groups accusing the Bogota government of responsibility in the deaths of anti-government activists. Colombia has been actively supporting the Guaido and the United States effort to overthrow Maduro. She says the coup in Venezuela is 100% made in the USA.
It seems that Juan Guaido declared today, the day before May 1st, as a coup. I think it was supposed to all happen tomorrow, but they were worried that it would they wouldn't be able to pull it off, so they did it today. And I think it has failed. It seems from the pictures that I'm seeing from Caracas and other parts of Venezuela that there are large numbers of people who've come out to support the government, and that Guaido is nowhere to be seen right now. So I think it's another failed attempt, but it has definitely upped the ante with the opposition leader Leopoldo López also now out of house arrest. And I would expect that if the Maduro government is indeed able to quash this coup, as it seems, then the next thing would be to arrest Juan Guaido, because you can't keep somebody who has called for a coup out on the streets organizing.
The United States is came out in support of this coup. Bolton made a statement in support of it, and I think so did President Trump. Where does that put them as far as the United States in this?
Well, let's be clear. This is all being orchestrated by the United States, and they are inciting people to violence. I mean, this is a time where we have to look for ways to calm the situation and not incite what could be a decades-long civil war. But when you have Elliot Abrams as the envoy to Venezuela and John Bolton in the National Security Council, they are not about calming down situations. They are about inflaming them. So I think the U.S. is very much involved and will be blamed for any of the violence that comes as a result of today's coup attempt.
From the beginning, the United States has seemed to have failed repeatedly in trying to push through this coup. They've been at it now for 3 or 4 months, and there are punishing sanctions against Venezuela, yet the country refuses to buckle under. What does that represent?
The U.S. government has no concept that there are indeed Venezuelans who do not want a U.S. intervention and continue to support the process in Venezuela. There were 6 million people that voted for Maduro. Now, of course, many people want change because of the economic situation that has gotten worse because of the sanctions. But their vision of change is very different from the U.S. vision of change. From the U.S. standpoint, it's let a U.S.-friendly government in that will open up the resources, especially oil, to U.S. companies. And the U.S. government has been very open about that. They say that it would be good for the United States to get hold of the production of Venezuela's oil. And they say that the Monroe Doctrine is alive and well, meaning the U.S. can dictate who runs governments in our, quote, backyard in Latin America. People in Latin America don't take kindly to that, not in Venezuela or not here where I am in Colombia.
Yeah, now you're in Colombia, and there's been some strong words said even in the last few days about Colombia's role in blaming Venezuela or the Venezuelan military for having some role in events. I'm not sure. I just caught a glimpse of that. Do you know what's going on between the two countries?
The right-wing government of Colombia has been working right alongside the U.S. in trying to engineer this coup in Venezuela. They have embraced Guaido. They have embraced the whole narrative of the coup. And they are the only thing they haven't embraced is using Colombia as a point for military intervention, because that would be going just a bit too far. But the social movements in Colombia are very much against the coup. They're against what their government is doing. And they want it to be known that while much of the world's attention is focused on Venezuela and the crisis there, there is an ongoing crisis in Venezuela where hundreds of social activists...
In Colombia, you mean?
I'm sorry, yeah. There are hundreds of social activists in Colombia, along with former guerrillas who laid down their arms as part of a peace process, who are being murdered. And I'm here as part of a gathering of thousands of social movement leaders from around the country to denounce these murders and call on the Colombian government to do something to protect their lives.
Mm-hmm. Is there growing stress or tension at the border between Colombia and Venezuela? I know there was at some point an attempt to get what they called humanitarian aid into the country, and there was some gunfire there. What's that look like?
Well, there is still a lot of tension at the border. The coup leaders are trying to use the outflow of Venezuelans as a justification for the coup, whereas there has been a back and forth at that border all the time. But the situation of the humanitarian aid has been diffused because the Red Cross, which refused to participate in the weaponized humanitarian crisis U.S. manufactured, is now working directly with the Venezuelan government to get aid inside that country.
Right. And what role, just to wrap up, what role do citizens like yourself, Americans and others, have in this crisis? What role do we have?
Well, one role for people who can is to go to the Venezuelan embassy in Washington, D.C., where we have been camped out for over 2 weeks now to protect it from the takeover by the opposition. And certainly we should be contacting our congresspeople to tell them to put out statements against the coup attempt and for calling on the U.S. government to stop interfering in the internal affairs of Venezuela. There's also a piece of legislation, H.R. 1004, that has been introduced to stop an illegal U.S. military intervention in Venezuela, and that's something that we should get our congresspeople, our senators, to support as well.
Anything you would like to add?
Well, this is a terrible time for the people of Venezuela living in such a state of uncertainty and taking an economic crisis and making it so much worse by the severe and, I would say, brutal and inhumane U.S. sanctions is really beyond the pale. And we have to rise up as U.S. citizens and say, stop using economic warfare, which is a form of collective punishment against the entire population of Venezuela. And while we ourselves have talked for 2 years about Russian interference in our elections, we should take a look at the coup going on right now, where the U.S. is not just interfering, but really has a plan for overthrowing another country's government. And we have to stop it.
If this fails again, which it looks like it is, what's next for the U.S.? Is Trump just going to go home with his tail between his legs and go to NASCAR like he's speaking at right now, or could this get escalated?
You know, Trump could get bored of the whole situation, but he's got Elliot Abrams and John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, and then he's got the people in Florida. He's got Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, and this is really a situation now that has a lot to do with U.S. electoral politics, specifically in Florida, where there's about 200,000 Venezuelans and Cubans who are right-wing and are supporting this coup. And so when you recognize that elections in Florida have been won, like the Gore versus Bush election in Florida won by 537 votes, and how key Florida is to presidential politics, that's a lot of what this boils down to. So I don't think the people in Florida are going to let this go. And I don't think the, quote, special envoy for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, is going to let it go. I'm sure he has a lot more ugly tools in his tool chest that he will try to use.
And that's Medea Benjamin, an activist with Code Pink. She spoke with WBAI from Bogota, Colombia on Tuesday. And Attorney General William Barr on Wednesday will face lawmakers' questions for the first time since releasing Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia report in what promises to be a dramatic showdown as he defends his actions before Democrats who accuse him of spinning the investigation's finding in President Donald Trump's favor. Barr's appearance before the Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to highlight the partisan schism around Mueller's report and the Justice Department's handling of it. It will give the Attorney General his most extensive opportunity to explain the department's actions, including a press conference held before the report's release, and for him to repair a reputation bruised by allegations that he's the president's protector. And finally, at the Maisel's Cinema at 343 Lenox Avenue in Harlem is hosting a retrospective of the work of filmmaker Lara Lee. Her work follows people who use their culture as a form of resistance to oppression. She's known for accompanying a ship that tried to bring aid to Palestinians trapped in Gaza that was boarded by Israeli commandos who killed 9 activists. Her work spans the world. Tonight, about electronic music in Africa. Later in the week, about the Western Sahara. She spoke about her work with WBA. AI on Tuesday.
We launched with Synthetic Pleasures, which is my very first film from 1995, and it was just amazing to see it like so many years later. And last night we had Burkinabe Rising, about the art of resistance in Burkina Faso. And tonight we screened Modulations, about the history of electronic music, how kids, you know, in Detroit and Chicago who could not afford acoustic instruments, they could only afford little synthesizers, toy instrument, and then all of a sudden they created this incredible music, revolutionary music that is the mainstream music all over the world nowadays, electronic music, dance music. And then May 2nd, on Thursday, we show Cultures of Resistance, which gives an overview, global view of resistance movements around the world. And then we end with Life is Waiting, about the referendum and resistance in Western Sahara, about the Moroccan occupation of Western Sahara, another subject that has been off the radar for people all over the world, and we are trying to connect all the movements together against occupation.
Yeah, you call yourself Culture of Resistance. I have one of your T-shirts, and that's your website. What do you mean by Culture of Resistance, and is that what you're trying to capture with your films?
Yes, because at the end of the day, it's about the cumulative of resistance movements, you know, and we focus on creative resistance, how we can use music, photography, dance, poetry, film to engage people and to provoke positive change. A lot of times we think, you know, political resistance is just political, but this political change comes from the combination of people getting together in unison to really, like, you know, like in Burkina Faso, all these artists and culture people and, you know, political activists and students, they all got together and they removed a president that was going to power for 27 years and wanted to stay longer. So the whole population went out on the street and says, enough is enough, and he had to flee. So it's about also like promoting the spirit, the revolutionary spirit about positive change, because we need young people to really engage and get action on the ground.
Filmmaking has brought you into some dangerous places. You were on a boat off of Gaza that got taken over by Israeli soldiers and people were injured and killed. Do you ever feel that kind of fear?
Well, I don't get fearful. I get outraged by state terrorism, you know, because a lot of times governments are like, oh, this person is a suicide bomber, is a terrorist. But I'm telling you, the biggest terrorists are governments and first world governments, first world country governments. And this is also another thing we have to fight against, the abuse of power and and all these, you know, powerful governments just stepping all over people. I mean, one of the films I made in the past is called When Elephants Fight, the Grass Suffers. So I make films about the grass. I make films about people and how we have to fight all these negative forces coming like big tsunamis against us, you know?
Tell us a story about what happened on that boat outside of Gaza.
Well, we were like international activists, humanitarian, you know, volunteers, and we had all these boats coming from different countries to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza. And we were in the middle of international waters, and the Israeli government just sent commandos and soldiers with masks and live ammunition. It was in the middle of the night, and we kind of expected that they would use tear gas and, you know, even jail us, but we never expected that they were going to start shooting. They killed 9 people on the Mavi Marmara boat, and they injured many, many people. And until now, you know, it's like, where is justice? At that time, you know, it was an international scandal because we were international people. Nowadays, you know, and even before the Israeli government, they use white phosphorus against Palestinians. They use all sorts of chemical weapons and nothing happens because they kill Palestinians and we don't have a lot of international witnesses. But at that particular event, we were international people and we all went back to our countries to tell the truth, what we saw with our own eyes.
And that's Lara Lee. Her films will be at the Maisel's Cinema, 343 Lenox Avenue, tonight and all this week. We are offering, as a membership premium, tickets to these mostly sold-out films. You can get them by becoming a member of WBAI and pledging $100 or $50 to become a member. Our number, membership drive number is 516-620-3602. Just ask for a premium. Ask for the premium tickets to Lara Lee's films at the Maisel's Cinema, 343 Lenox Avenue in Harlem. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for joining us.